Okay. All set. And then we'll begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee on August 8, 2011, here at 6 p.m. here at Central Services Office. Would you take a moment to review the meeting minutes from June 6, 2011?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Steve?
Yes, good.
Okay. So, the first order of business this evening will be the implementation of cost of the 21st Century Classroom. I was asked to put together just a brief report. I was asked to prepare a brief report in terms of initial and expected long-term cost to the district of what the 21st Century Classroom was going to look like and what the approximate fees would be there. As you know, the first thing we did this summer was that we already had Lincoln School being painted. So we also had the two classrooms that were identified as the 21st Century Classrooms. Those have been painted also, as well as two elementary classrooms in each one of our three other buildings, for a total of 8 classrooms for implementation this fall. We're expected, I've got a price on that, it came in at about $9,000 for the other 6 classrooms. As you know, we have put together a painting program that would occur over the next several years. The approximate cost, as close as I can garner, is that painting is about $50,000 for a 50,000 square foot elementary school building. Anticipated technology costs will remain essentially the same, because that is a program that might get put together prior to us even talking about the 21st century technology. Nothing has really changed from that. Floor coverings, we have gone throughout our conversations with the curriculum department, B&G, our building staff, and so forth, we've designed a pattern that will be implemented in each building. Each building will be particular in itself, but it will be run pretty much characteristically throughout that building. And what that is these are on these are about 20 to 24 inch tiles that are easily set down, easily removed. They're not permanently glued. It can be worked around. There's a seal strip that goes around and it prevents dirt from getting underneath there, under the carpeted tiles, or the kids tripping, whatever the case may be. These have been designed for each building. It's approximately 5 feet wide. It runs the length or width of the classroom, whichever way that particular classroom is set up. The approximate cost are $1,762 per classroom, for a total cost this year of $14,096. If we were to introduce this concept district-wide, we have approximately 130 classrooms at our elementary schools, so my cost indicates that the district-wide cost would be about $230,000. Again, these would be costs that we would implement after review, whether it be over a year, 2 years, or 3 years. But again, we could phase it in quickly or take the longer approach to it. Finally, we have furniture costs. As you know, we went out to bid for furniture earlier this year. The furniture that was bid earlier this year was pretty much just replacement things that needed to be replaced, a lot of it at the junior high school, but also some basic equipment that needed to be replaced at the elementary schools. This new proposal, which I'm going to just show you some equipment that's coming up in a later recommendation this evening, will be implemented over a number of years at the elementary school level. Tonight you're going to see a board report where the cost is expected not to exceed $63,000 or district-wide. If you were to take it over the 130 classrooms at the elementary school level, it's about $1,040,000. And then I wanted to just give you an idea of what this equipment, and this will be the equipment that you're going to see in this next recommendation. So this is the type of desk. As you can see, it's kind of, maybe a moon-shaped type of desk. But it gives us a lot of flexibility. They can be set up in circles. They can be set up in rows. They can be set up in squares. We've seen S-curve type of designs. We've seen many, many different types of designs. And this gives us a lot of flexibility. with this particular chair, or with that particular table. Going along with that table, their desk, is this type of chair here. And believe me, we've test driven probably six or eight different types of desks, probably a dozen different types of chairs. They were put in our classroom over at Lincoln School for the kids to take for about the last 4 weeks of school. Spoke to the teacher who was gracious enough to allow us to put this furniture in her room. She said the kids loved it. This particular chair here, it gives a lot of movement for the kids to move from side to side and backwards and forwards. Kids learn it in a lot of different ways. So we try to give them some flexibility. They can even turn around and wrap their legs around the chair and put their arms up on top of the chair itself. Gives a lot of different flexibility for the way kids learn today.
I just have a real quick question.
Yeah.
That desk looks like it's a right-handed desk. Is are there any left-handed?
It's all the same.
It works the same for both sides.
Yeah.
It goes around. The child can pretty much set their chair any way that they can that they want there, and it also is designed.
Not the chair left hands.
Oh, okay.
Right. And it also is designed so that the kids, the chairs are light enough so that at the end of the day or sometime throughout the school day, the kids can get up and actually put the chair on the desk itself. So it makes for easier cleaning. It makes for a little bit greater flexibility. So that's the type of chair. Then these are the cubbies that we were going to put in because you don't have, essentially, don't have a holding space under here. But we did the recommendation this evening that we'll have sort of a metal bracket that will fit in there, and then the kids will have cubbies where they can come and pick their stuff up and still sort of individualize their space each and every day. But again, this is not intended for kids to line up five children deep across a classroom. Gives the teacher a lot of flexibility and the kids a lot of different ways to learn it.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, there'll be storage under the desk?
No.
There will be a metal rack that will hold the plastic tray. The plastic trays are stored in here. It has their pens and papers and whatever else they might need. It's their own sort of personal equipment. But what we're trying to move away from is Joey going in and sitting at this same desk every single day. The kids have some flexibility. They can move around. They can move their desk around. They can move around. Give some flexibility where you wouldn't have that previously.
Ultimately, the classroom, as it evolves, will probably not have one student desk per student, but have a multitude of feeding configurations.
So they move throughout the day versus through every month or so when they all change their desks.
Right. And they don't have a single desk that belongs to just them. No, they might be at a high top instead of a desk, or they might be just located, everybody comes down on the mat to the carpet to do attendance and the whole group instruction, but otherwise kids are in unique settings.
It provides some flexibility if they're going to be in smaller groups or larger groups or working groups at this
time. Bob, when you said at Lincoln, do you remember what room that was in?
It was Jordy Conrad's.
Classroom 170.
And there'll be we tried to have a primary and an intermediate at each school, but in one school I think it's two intermediates, and in one school it's two primaries. So, wherever the readiness was for the
room. There were more teachers requesting to be pilots than there were. How was it decided if there were more?
The principal selected. And I just can't remember. I think there were more. At most of the schools, but like three or four.
Yeah, I think there were more teachers that volunteered to pilot this
than we could accept, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I just want to give you a couple more shots of different types of equipment here. This is a recommended type of chair. As you can see, it has some flexibility in here and how a child can sit and so forth. But this will also be in coasters, and this will be at their computer, at their computer table. These are called Hokies. And I wish I had one to show you tonight, but I don't need a case. This is the colors and the sizes and shapes. I think we've got a couple of different sizes coming in. And again, it gives the kids a lot of different type of movement, different flexibilities. the way they can sit, straddle, and learn. So gives us a lot of different varieties there. We also have two different types of bean bags. We've got this first type here where the child actually kind of sits on top of it. Next one you sit in where I sat one and it felt like the recliner in my living room. I mean, that's how comfortable they get.
That's a fat boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they are comfortable. You all this is a day
okay. These primarily for primary grades.
Second, third.
No, but the bean bags would be all grades, and the Hokie could be all grades as well. The chairs that were selected were really designed to appreciate kinesthetic movement in learning without having, you know, kids necessarily moving around the room, but that the research has shown that small movements to kids, you know, they like to maybe work like this, or talk like that, that having flexibility in those chairs allows for greater connection between the kinesthetic movement and the brain activity.
I guess they just see a big difference between the chairs you showed here and the ones with rollers in terms of stacking or other things. What is the difference between the different furniture that you showed?
Is going to be for computer uses.
So
they'll be four in a classroom. We're going to have two 5-foot tables in each classroom, and it'll be two computers set up in each table, and it'll be four of these chairs in the room in addition to the regular seated chairs for their desks.
Which go on the desk. Or it could be staff.
The other kind. Okay, that's what I was talking about. We got the tennis balls there, and just, sound management. Are these noisier,
Well,
I don't know if most classrooms have roller chairs in them. Just thinking.
These are actually of a plastic.
But it raises the question about acoustics in all floor, for flooring in general. Is it better to have the carpeting, or you're going to put the tennis balls on the bottoms of each of them?
Well, but those types of chairs with tennis balls are different kinds, with lights coming down.
Right.
Whether it's you've got.
They're a pedestal.
Yeah.
The other kind, they might not.
They're slide easier.
Conducive to making noise.
Yeah.
These here that we're proposing, we have a slide type of design here, and then there's also padding on the front and back of each chair also. That should lessen. That's the way we use tennis balls and a pedestal type of desk. Mm-hmm. This is a whole different type of chair.
Well, and you, like you said, you had these in classrooms at Lincoln for a month before school let out, so you must have gotten feedback from the teacher on those issues, because that would be the first thing that would jump out is, they were rolling around, they were, whatever the issues were, so you must have gotten
more positive.
The
recommendations I'm bringing to you are the recommendations that were given to
you.
Me, this is what we like.
I just want to clarify that so we all hear that, too. Yeah. Good.
Okay. What did the... can you help me understand the discrepancy between the layouts and the shapes of those desks? I see, the FGM layouts of this desk.
The layouts. I mean, I think we were going to talk about the layouts as part of this.
The furniture. Okay, so.
But the layouts do reflect these desks.
Just normal sprayer.
One of them I see looks like it, like the Lincoln one, but when I look at the Franklin, the student desk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they are, the desks chosen are all this, the one that looks like the one on Lincoln. So it may be that their drawing was reflecting, here's some options, here's what we're still looking at, but we didn't choose that particular drawing.
And I wouldn't say that their options for design of a particular classroom were not in line with the furniture recommendations. In other words, those were just very general schematics in terms of what they could do, different types of outlays or different layouts that they could have in their classroom. Just showing the flexibility that you get when you don't line kids up five across the front, five deep. That was their intention behind this, the individualized classroom layout.
Mm-hmm.
With the two beanbag chairs, what's the life expectancy of the beanbags? How long?
Well, those are developed for classroom use. How long they'll last, I suppose it really depends upon each individual classroom, but I mean, they are intended for educational use for kids at a variety of ages.
Okay. So they're good for they're 5 years?
At least 5 years. And okay. They have a fabric that, if I can remember this correctly, can be cleaned and has a, you know, kind of a natural a finish that's on it that repels
okay.
stains and that sort of thing. And I don't want to say something as simplistic as Scotch Guard.
That's what
but
I
the, yeah, but the concept that yeah. it will repel those, you know, dirt and liquids and that sort of thing.
This is the type of teacher desk that we're looking to implement. Just a point here is this actually has sort of a bubble type of effect on the end so the kids can gather around mm-hmm. and talk around. So instead of just having a squared off edge, you might be able to gather 3 or 4 kids around. We haven't made up our mind. That's why in the report that you're going to see next, I indicated a maximum purchase price of $63,000. Because if we go with this type of desk, we won't need to add on this type of chair for a teacher in conference room. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then moving along, this is the type of desk that we'll be using for computer use. We have 2 of these in each classroom, and again, it's on the chair that I've previously shown.
One of those, I guess I'm just vaguely picturing the ones in my son's classroom. I thought that looked very similar.
They may.
How are they?
We have these in the district now.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So it's not.
No, not every piece of furniture would be new, but we're looking for flexibility, stackability, and ability to be used in different configurations that would maximize the space that you have. So like the teacher desk is a more efficient desk than the current desks we have. The beanbag is able to be used in the reading corner as well as kind of an arena environment, as well as give some kids height if they're sitting at the back of something during a presentation or in the front.
When we took a tour of District 89 in their 21st century classroom, they had kids sitting at different levels. They had them in a small beanbag. They had them in something a little bit higher. Then they had them in a desk, and possibly they had some cabinetry off to one side of the corner or one side of the classroom that even gave them a little greater height. So they were learning. Of course, this was a reading classroom also. So there were kids sitting at different levels. Mm-hmm.
There's pictures of 89's classroom because there's a link on their website. It's Flip the Classroom. I remember we talked about that. Maybe, Sam, you were in at that meeting. So to go on there, then you'd have a picture of what it kind of looks like in there. It's pretty neat because they have a lot of these, you know, pieces of furniture already.
They have just one
classroom. Yeah, they did a Flip the Classroom with Leggett Architects to do some lighting and different furniture and that kind of thing.
They did the whole thing.
Yeah.
They did their lighting, their windows, window paint, treatments, yeah. Paint, flooring.
Yeah. So that's on their website.
Just a point of clarification. What we're looking to do is to do these test classrooms, 2 classrooms in each elementary school.
Correct.
And
total of 8 classrooms district-wide.
So you're not asking for $1,040,000. You're asking for the 63. So that's.
And the next recommendation will be looking for the 63 to implement this year. And I'll get a little bit further into that report.
And we're going to test that and see how that works. I mean, obviously, if there are, you discover certain things, you can certainly tweak the furniture plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So. Just a bit test.
Right. And aligned with the long-range plan and where we see classrooms moving over the course of the next several years is to greater individualized instruction, is to not whole class experiences, but more project-based learning so that students are moving around a room and are not static, so that you don't, I mean, while we're taking a baby step in some ways because there will be 25 desks and chairs in the room along with this other furniture, we would see over time that there might not be 25 desks, but there might be 15 desks and other kinds of seating arrangements so that every child has a seat, place to sit, but not, which would maximize the size of the classrooms we already have. So it's looking at what can we do within the spaces we have, which are not huge classroom spaces, to maximize flexibility in that room, aligned with the master facilities recommendations. Does that make sense?
$162,000, though, how much would have been normal replacement cost?
Well, I brought a recommendation to you earlier this year that asked for about $90,000 worth of replacement, but that included cafeteria tables, our stackable chairs that we use in various common areas. There were some desks. There was a hodgepodge of different type of equipment asked for in that request.
We could probably give you an estimate of what our standard classroom setup would cost if it was brand new.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, related to 63, they're saying, well, there's some classrooms we were going to buy new desks for anyway, or new chairs that we just decided on trying out a different kind. What is the true above what we normally, if we had implemented this, it would have only been, you know, 50% of it or 40%.
We're kind of at that point now where we would have begun wholesale replacement of desk at the elementary school level. Whether it would have been this desk or would have been the standard desk.
Right. So that's the same. Yeah. Even when you're 63.
It's a wash. It's pretty much
say,
a wash.
Well, okay, but we were, it's part of a normal process anyway.
Right. We're just making some different choices about it, and we've added the painting into it. But the painting is also part of our long-range projects for renovating each of our buildings by repainting each of them.
Right.
So.
And even if we go to the million, that wouldn't be in 1 year.
No.
Go out things you bought 2 years ago.
No.
That's a phased-in plan.
Our buildings were last painted in 97 or 98. This furniture is from 97 or 98. All the things that we're doing are actually, this is a good time to do them because they're aging and they needed either replacement, repair, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
What bucket does the test and the eventual replacement, what does that normally come out of?
O&F, operations and maintenance.
That would be FF&E.
The painting will come out of there. The desk, the district level replacement of tables, chairs, desk, things of that nature. Technology comes out of Mike's budget. So it comes from several different line items. So here's an idea of what a classroom would look like at Lincoln. A little bit different, maybe you just don't have kids sitting in five rows. Here you have kids sitting in groups of four. Here's a computer area. This is the teacher learning area. This is the area where the carpet has been put in. So this, although this may not seem like it's that much out on the edge, it certainly is different than what we're accustomed to seeing.
Well, this is very traditional. I mean, actually, right now, many of our classrooms look just like that. But the way the desks are arranged, and because of the desks that are there, they could be changed very rapidly into a more seamless arrangement. And as I said, all of these pictures still are based in the kind of the system of a desk for every child, and just arrange what you have in different ways, as opposed to totally changing the concept at this early stage.
So I'll just run quickly through these different classroom setups that we have then.
And these are just samples. These are samples of what could be. This doesn't say this is going to be at Franklin, this is going to be at Lincoln, this is going to be at Churchill. They're just kind of ideas that were thrown out as we were discussing things.
Nor do I think we would dictate to the classroom teacher how this might set your classroom.
Right. The other thing is the carpet squares that Bob talked about. We currently have rugs, round rugs in the classrooms, and so putting the carpet squares is a way of creating a symbolic area, gathering area in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And it also, we will never have the space to have a performance area in each classroom. It's just the size of our classrooms probably wouldn't allow that. So the carpeting also allows you to create kind of that designation that here's the performance area, here's where you stand, here's where the audience is. And so there's symbolism in the way that those carpet squares would be created and aligned and placed on the floor.
Mm-hmm. And they are, generally speaking, if you were to have the carpet all through here, it's sort of centrally located in the middle of that carpeted area, sort of gathering space. Mm-hmm. The carpets are not just a plain single color carpet, they're multicolored. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different types of configurations going on within them, but they do sort of pinpoint a central locating area towards the center of the classroom. Here's something a little bit different maybe than what we're seeing. Again, this would, you have kids in individual grouping of tables, but then you have this type of configuration in the center of the classroom. Sort of, certainly a lot of flexibility there than what we maybe typically have seen. And something a little bit different again. Okay. And then this is just something that was designed.
Can you turn the other way?
Yeah. Oh, so that would help.
Does the teacher decide the layout? Or?
You know, I'll just make a quick point while we're getting the slide up. In the 8th grade LA classes, really even 4, 5, 6 years ago when my daughter was there, teachers were already creating space, bringing in a rocking chair, creating, you know, space. Probably don't want to hear that, Phyllis, but... they're not supposed to do that, but the point is they've been personalizing their classrooms, and I think that what's you know, interesting when you look at the 89 space is this desire to do what you just said, Dan, which is I know what my best teaching style is, and I've figured out this classroom kids in the first 3 weeks, and this is what they need. So how do I make that work environmentally? And that's the flexibility it sounds like we're trying to. Provide.
And here you see kids, you've got them on bean bags, you've got them in a sort of a circular configuration here. You have your computer area off on one side of the classroom. They also had a sort of like a high top type of effect. You've got kids sitting on the floor in a bean bag at a typical desk and chair, and maybe at a high top, 3 or 4 different levels, all within the same classroom. Here's that little performance area that we won't have, but it'll still give us some flexibility with the carpet tiles. And then a reading area in the sort of the center of the classroom, if you will, also. And again, a final shot of just a little bit of different types of flexibility that you can have in a classroom with different types of modern furniture. Any questions on that?
I went just two quick ones. I was a bit confused. You said we have a $63,000 limit, but the total of the low cost of everything is $65,000. What did you say you were cutting?
I have to make. We have to make a determination in terms of what teacher desk we finally go to.
Okay.
Because if we go to that one desk, it's a little more expensive up front. The type of the bubble front, but we won't need that extra banquet table, if you will, little conference table.
Okay,
so we won't need that to square it off. So yeah. I would look to make a recommendation that will total out right at about $63,000. And it really won't be my recommendation, it will be that of curriculum and the teachers in terms of sort of the direction I think they'd like to take.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then this timeline, I see it. It goes into the school year. So
yes.
What's that mean for timing of classroom refresh?
We will be taking this to the board for discussion on the 22nd of August, then for board in early September. We can put that order in, and we would expect to have that furniture in 6 to 8 weeks, and we would look to put it together probably over a weekend and implement it on a Monday morning or over a break time or something like that. We would certainly look to have it fully implemented, certainly by mid-semester this year.
And we're talking about the two classrooms per school, the furniture for the two classrooms.
Correct. 8 classrooms all together, 2 per building at each of the elementary schools.
So they're already painted now?
The Lincoln is painted, and the two, they will be painted, all each of those two classrooms.
Lincoln is painted now, and the other two classrooms will be at each building will be finished by the end of this week.
So we went ahead and painted them because they're on. We've got this painting schedule that we hope that we'll be able to implement over the next couple of years at each of the buildings. So we thought, let's get the painting scheme up at each of the buildings so that people can see it in the two classrooms.
Sorry, I missed the. So if we go through with all this, order the furniture comes in, gets put in, when's the date again?
Well, no later than mid-semester. I mean, if we, if depending on the timing of the furniture, maybe it's a weekend, maybe it's Thanksgiving break. It sort of depends on when the furniture arrives. But teachers are prepared for that. They understand that they would not have it at the beginning of the school. I mean, we sort of, this idea evolved rather abruptly in the spring. And, you know, we decided rather than wait a full year, it would be better to do an implementation after the start of the school year.
Okay, any further questions? Then I will move on to the next board report, and that is the result of 21st Century Furniture and Equipment bids. We went out to bid on July 7th with a due date of July 21st. We sent bid packets out to 14 vendors that we typically deal with or those that expressed interest. In participating in the bid, three vendors returned bid packets. And what we've done is I've sort of summarized here. We're looking to order 200 student desks and chairs, 8 teacher desks and chairs, file cabinets, and then the planner activity table might fall off if we go with this other design teacher desk. The 48 Hokie rocker chairs, which would be 6 in a classroom. Then we have 32 beanbag chairs, which are 4 to a classroom. And then the 8 computer tables and chairs. There is no additional cost except what's been indicated in this report, additional to this proposal, and we would look to keep this recommendation right at about $63,000. Again, the reason I don't have an exact number is because we haven't determined exactly what the final teacher desk is going to look like. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a quick question, Drew? You mentioned in here that the bid stipulated that the award could be split by manufacturers, so we might get the Hokie chairs from this person, the student desk from here, blah, blah. Did they bid based on costs, though, bundling if they were all purchased from them, or did they?
When we just devise our, when we create our bid documents, they are told mm-hmm. that this bid can't be split.
Okay.
So, like, I have had a vendor call and says, well, I gave you a price that means
based
I can't
split on the whole.
Back, but
yeah.
If that's the way you want to
yeah.
take it, then withdraw your bid.
They right.
back out.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So this will be taken to the board for discussion on August 22nd and then for action on September 12th. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? All right.
Thanks,
then. Bob. The next order of business this evening is something we do every fall. We were acquired by Illinois School Code as well as the Illinois Program Accounting Manual, which is the sort of the Bible for accountants in Illinois school finance. We are required to transfer, or I should say pay, our operating leases. Those are leases that we were actually owned the equipment at one time. We are required to account for those in the Ed Fund, and then we transfer those monies out of the Ed Fund into the Debt Service Fund and pay them accordingly out of the Debt Service Fund. This year's total leases are for $180,582.65, and they include operating leases for security cameras, desktop computers, smart boards, and computer switching equipment. Some of this are leases that have just come into effect over the past year that Mike brought a recommendation to the board earlier this spring. Some of these are a year or two old. So they're all at varying levels of length in terms of where they're at in their life in terms of ultimate purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions? Okay. Attached is a resolution. The resolution has been
Is this the reverse of the other transfer we did?
No. That transfer was from the educator, or actually from the working cash fund to transportation. And that was because of the significant decline in revenue that we typically receive in a transportation fund. So that was a loan from the working cash into transportation. It's expected that we'll pay that loan back in September.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the bonds are paid out from the county collecting it, right?
Right.
So mm-hmm. when this has to be paid out of debt service, there wasn't the county filling that up directly.
Right.
So
right.
we have to go move money in to pay a
right.
debt.
This was an accounting change that came through about 3 years
right.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
They just said all your capital rights are anything you're going to own or you're leasing right now, you have to account for it through the debt service fund. And because it's not part of a levy process, we have to literally transfer the money from
mm-hmm.
an operating fund into the debt service fund. So
it's a transaction.
Dan, does that make sense logically?
Oh yeah, I just
you wanted to make sure it wasn't the same.
I didn't know if it was the 10% yet.
Right.
Something completely different.
On that note, to transfer the funds back to pay back the loan will not require a board action to do it. We will just do the transaction. We will let you know when we've done the transition. Because if you the resolution itself that you adopted last summer in June stated when it would be repaid. So you, the board doesn't have to take action to direct us to make the repayment.
Okay.
And then we'll let you know through other communications when it has been done.
Okay. Next order of business then this evening is establishment of the fund balance classification for GASB 34. That's the Government Accounting Standards Board. It's the latest proclamation from GASB, and it has to do with how we account for our fund balances. Previously, we've had just designated or undesignated types of fund balances. We are now required to classify them as non-spendable fund balances. And I'm trying to give you a little explanation in terms of what each one is. You have non-spendable fund balances, which would include inventories and prepaid assets. You have restricted fund balances, which would, an example of that would be for debt service or capital projects. Then you have committed fund balances, and that would be an example of something that the board has taken action on and committed to for a capital replacement or a major maintenance project that we've identified for a number of years out here. We want to spend $1 million 3 years from now. We want to set aside this dollar value now, and that will be held separated and segregated from the other funds. Just one point of interest here. This was to provide greater clarity to the public. So, and as the accountant explained it to me, I said that jesting somewhat. But a lot of municipal forms of government, particularly local forms of like our village or our cities, they might have 30, 40, or 50 different types of funds.
Mm-hmm.
And they have gotten very, very complicated, and they have a tendency to move monies around rather suspiciously and so forth. That's not what has occurred in education, at least that I'm aware of, but this was a way that cleared up all different types of accounting for fund balances. And because we are one of those types of municipal organizations that fall under that specific category, we're required to account for these fund balances, effective with the end of the last fiscal year. So finally, we have two additional types of fund balances. These are the assigned fund balances and the unassigned fund balance, which is the final or unassigned fund balance, which is the remainder. Okay. Another little bit of information to sort of further complicate things. We will be doing things as we move forward. You won't see it in tonight's budget, but we will do it as we move forward. We're going to now be required to move into a general fund, which is what we moved away from a couple of years ago.
It's not completely the general fund. It's called the general fund. It's different
levying and so forth. But what's going to happen is that as part of the general fund, there's going to be the education account, the working cash, and the tort account. Those three will be combined to have a general fund. Then we'll still have our operation and maintenance, our debt service, transportation, our various retirement funds, and then the capital fund. But those three accounts, the ed, working cash, and tort, will all be combined in a general fund.
For the purposes of our capital report only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it says.
All other reports, including the AFR, will remain as they are. They're not subject to the report. This is strictly for our capital report format. So the other report that, like the AFR, which everybody uses for comparison, will remain the same.
So any Illinois forms will remain unchanged, as Phyllis indicated, your AFR. But your comprehensive annual financial report, the CAP, or the one that we present to the public and other entities that we do business with, that's what will change. And the only thing that really will change is the presentation of the final of the fund balances. Attached to this report is a resolution. The resolution was signed off by our accountants as well as our attorney. So this is, we're good to go with this recommendation here. Any questions?
I'd just like to make a clarifying comment. Bob made a statement that I, just in case any of our municipal colleagues are listening, that the complication of some of the municipal accounts precipitated conversations about making this change in GASB, not because people were doing suspicious things, but may give the appearance of, you know, moving accounts around in a way that's more confusing than what the accounting standards would like to see from the viewpoint of transparency. So I know Bob didn't mean that they were actually doing suspicious things, but that because there was so much complexity and it gave the appearance of the perception of. So I just want to make that clarifying comment.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. I knew what you meant.
Anyone on another government entity ever said they'd listen to
us? No, but I just in case. I wouldn't want to cast aspersions.
Mm-hmm. And that was not my intent.
No, I know it wasn't that.
So, any other questions on that then? Okay, next order of business then will be the Hadley Security System update. As you know, or I hope you're aware, we have typically budgeted $35,000 annually for continued updates and revisions to our security system. We have replaced cameras at a couple of different elementary schools. We have we bought cameras. We bought servers to support those cameras. We purchased the two-way communication system, which in the type of stormy weather that we've had lately seems to be useful to us. And this year, our recommendation that we're bringing to the board at this time will be for the either update or replacement of 16 cameras at Hadley Junior High. That cost is for $20,344.69. In addition to that, we'll need annual support by ADT, and that is for $2,792. Now, just to give you a little history, Mike and I were, I'm going to say probably 4 years ago, because of the age of our existing system, we were having a lot of issues with them. So what Mike did, I believe, this is the way we went around this, is that we called in several vendors that the district has had a relationship with over a number of years. And there wasn't really a single sort of local source vendor out there that could provide us the long-term care or advice or service that like an ADT can. That's why we thought we would go with a national known company, one with some longevity to it, as well as the anticipation of being in business for a number of years. So that's the reason we chose ADT. This is the recommendation we're having for this year in terms of allocating approximately $20,500, as well as the ongoing cost of about $2,800. Again, we'll be looking to take this to the board on August 22nd and then the board for action on September 12th.
This is the O&M bucket again? Mm-hmm. And why, I guess who else, you know, why couldn't you go out for bid with this, with the whole package when you look at the one-time cost plus the annual cost?
Well, first of all, it's excluded from bidding requirements because of the technology that's involved. That is specifically outside of the legal parameters that are established by Illinois code. We could have, but then it would have engaged a lot of vendors that maybe not have the national presence that an ADT has. We've been through this before where we would get these one-time vendors come in and put cameras here, and we'd never see them again, and there was no support to those systems. So we just thought it better, long-term, what's the best recommendation that we can make to the district. That's why we selected a company like ADT that has longevity and has the more than just the potential of being in business for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that Mike and I sat across the hallway with a number of vendors, and ADT impressed us both with their history as well as their what we anticipate out of them.
And when I read through this, it was not clear to me what that annual fee really gets you. I mean, there's a lot of fine print, but I couldn't figure out what it really got you. Maybe you could explain it.
Hardware and software support. So one of the things that we had done was either a year or two ago, when we did enter into our relationship with ADP is we've gotten all the back-end servers to ADP. And those servers are also proprietary, software is and hardware. So it's not like we can go out to Best Buy and pick up one of those servers. So that covers our hardware support in the event that we do have an issue with the hardware, they'll replace it, as well as the cameras. So another reason to continue the relationship with ADT is since we do have their back-end equipment, which is all proprietary, the cameras will be a lot easier to integrate in working with ADT to understand how to use the software and then configure it on the server. So it's kind of the decision we had made when we decided to go with ADT and their camera system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some 90-day warranty listed in here, but then I think I just wanted to make sure because there was a 90-day warranty on a bunch of stuff, but then I was hoping that that service agreement superseded that in some way.
Well, I think the warranty would be in place regardless, but we have the service agreement that takes us beyond the 90 days for a year.
And, you know, just as a point, if they have somebody that you cancel, you got to pay 90% of the remaining charges. So. To me, that implies that the fees are subsidizing the equipment in some way. So I didn't know if it'd be cheaper if we, you know, paid more up front versus the annual fee.
Like purchasing the servers and the...
Yeah, just whenever you see something that says you have to pay 90% of the remaining service charges, mm-hmm. to me that implies that there's some sort of a subsidizing of the hardware in your yearly charges. Mm-hmm.
I can't.
So it's a question to ask them.
Yeah, maybe there's some better finance options.
Bob, there, read through this. It seems like we're set up with the CSO and Hadley. That's the only two buildings.
No, we have
all the part
cameras at all of our buildings.
Portable cameras. Okay.
And we're just continuing to try to update that. As we move forward, what we've done, we do have some cameras here at CSO. We're looking for a major update at Hadley, and then we have done work previously at Franklin also.
So this agreement is just an adjunct. Is there a master agreement that has all the different schools listed? I'm just, from a legal standpoint, I'm trying to.
What do you mean, like a master service agreement?
Right, because we've got a contract that covers all the schools.
And we do.
This agreement just addresses
Hadley and CSO.
Right, because that's the scope of the project.
It's all in the neighborhood.
We've already got support agreements and contracts for the other four buildings and this building already.
When they were installed.
This is just to add on to the system that we currently have.
So theoretically, then there would be an existing agreement with Hadley and the new agreement on Hadley.
Yes.
For the existing server at Hadley, and now this would be in addition, adding on to the camera.
Mm-hmm. At Hadley, you mentioned in here that you're updating 16 cameras. Are there any of the cameras being placed in new locations?
Yes.
I read that into it with looking at areas where we've had some other problems. So I think that's a good thing because it covers us in some ways that we're just evolving as a school and different needs. So
these are all in common areas throughout the building where there's heavy access or there's access to the building or heavy traffic. And again, there have been some issues that happened in the past.
Yeah. Yep. And then last question, the ongoing maintenance associated with the cost is the system for 5 years. So after 5 years, it's re-upping a new service agreement or renegotiating that, whatever it might need.
Right. I mean, or you could just not go with the service agreement, but then that leaves us without any coverage in the event that you have issues with the hardware or the software. Yeah.
Which is another reason you chose ADT, because in the past several years, we have had difficulty with service agreements that we had when we wanted to access the equipment. You know, the equipment is only as good as it is when you need it. Mm-hmm. And when we needed it, we had some difficulties, and the companies that we had dealt with were no longer able to be found. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair way of saying it?
In some cases, these rollouts are to replace some old equipment that is aging and failing, and in this event, it's also to add on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's absolutely critical, because when we've had incidences, we know that that's part of the process, you know, the process in terms of being able to follow up on it. So it's not something to, you know, to certainly take lightly.
The system has been very reliable. It's been in place the last couple of years. So if there's a camera there and it is taking video, we've been able to get, get something of value.
Yeah, that's good. And I think Bob mentioned earlier, but maybe not specifically outside the report, that if you recall, we had a safety audit done in 2005, and each year Bob has looked at that, the recommendations from that, and allotted so much of our budget dollars to addressing the recommendations of that, and this is one of those areas.
I know, Mike, when we talked about this a few years ago, I'd asked you why we weren't starting to use IP cameras and the whole power over Ethernet switches we put in, and just the lower complexities, because it looks like we're still putting analog cameras up and running coax back to the DVR.
And our rep has offered to, they've got a promotion right now where they're trying to push the IP camera.
I mean, well, what is the cost difference? Why can't we even trial some? I mean, even Wi-Fi cameras, you don't need to run any wiring. You just plug it in and it's on the network.
And in some cases, the coax is already in place.
Right,
we're just replacing the camera. We can look into the IP.
That's really where everything's going. And we've got, it's just putting the camera on the computer network. It's addressable. You can probably get motor control on them, things like that.
You still have to tie that back into the server. And I believe when we spoke to the rep that there was some additional equipment that was required at the server end to get those cameras to interface. So the servers that we have right now will support the analog cameras. I don't think without...
Well, there's got to be something to deconversion at the server. At some point, it's just digital video. Mm-hmm. You know, it's whether it's that conversion is done at the camera and just put on the network and then aggregated at the server, or whether you send all the analog back. But I have to believe the cost to start to be going down with IP-based cameras, and you've got a lot more flexibility than on coax.
You can certainly look into the cost of IP cameras and replace these.
That's something that if we were able to do between now and the next meeting, we might bring this back as a revised proposal, or is that I just wondered timing-wise if that was when you said we can look into it.
What peripherals do we power off the power over Ethernet switches tonight?
Currently?
Yeah.
We do phones and we do
the fires, that's right.
Mm-hmm. It's worth the question. It's worth the conversation.
This is old technology. I mean, that's, that's what I'm saying. Somewhere at least trial it. You know, maybe the costs aren't there or something. Maybe they aren't as reliable. I don't know. I think that since we've installed the infrastructure, we should start looking into that. Because I think it does give you flexibility in where you put a camera. You don't need coax there.
Mm-hmm.
You just need a computer network or even Wi-Fi. You know, Wi-Fi-based cameras just need power.
Mm-hmm. With National School Safety, the consultant, would they have, wonder if they would have any examples of that technology in place?
I think the best thing for probably Mike and I to do is go back and talk to our rep from ADT, and if there's any additional information we can provide, we'll provide it in an updated board report at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Can you see a single camera? Can you log into the network and check a certain camera at a certain time? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's from the server?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Then the next order of business this evening is the proposed Hadley parking lot reconstruction. As you know, we have a capital project plan, and we review and re-review that each and every year. And we're at the early stages now of making recommendations or bringing recommendations to the Finance Committee and ultimately to the Board in terms of what next summer's capital project, that's the summer of 2012. As residents of Glen Allen, I'm sure you've heard the ongoing conversations about reconstructing Hawthorne from Glenbard West all the way to Hadley. Over the past few months, I have been approached by the village to see if we would have any interest in partnering with them, or if we were going to be making any updates to the Hadley parking lot, could we provide them with a plan in terms of what we might have in mind so that they could incorporate those plans in terms of the long-term plan that they're proposing for implementation, reconstruction next summer. So we have met with the village, we've met with their engineers, we have met with, obviously, with FGM and our engineers, Erickson Engineering. And what I'd like to do is start the conversation now in terms of participating with the village on doing this project for next summer. It's going to be a lengthy process. If you were to look at recommendations that have been made out of the site committee, out of the finance of the master facility committee a couple of years ago, and I've had conversations periodically with the police department, and they have all made comment with regards to the above ground detention and so forth that we have have out in front of Hadley now. It's above ground detention. There's fencing around there. There's a lot of bushes. It provides for a lack of sight lines from the center or from the administrative offices of Hadley. It provides for difficulty coming in or exiting the Hadley lot along Hawthorne. There's a lot of different issues that exist there. And as Bob Binnick has said, this is sort of this is once in a 30 or 40 year project or 50 year project that the village is going to be doing a major reconstruction along Hawthorne. So they're trying to gauge our interest in terms of what we might be looking to do over the next several years. We have had that master facility group. We brought them together a couple of years ago. There are a number of plans out there, a plan out there in terms of what might happen overall with the Hadley campus. This recommendation is not being brought forward in sort of a, well, here, this is what we're going to do, or is trying to force an issue in terms of what's going to happen with the Hadley campus. But rather, it would take into consideration things that may occur on that site over the next 5, 10, or 15 years. So it would be my request to commit some funds. It's going to cost about $15,000 for us to go out and work with our engineers and see what it would take to take the what is now considered above ground detention and put it underneath this new parking lot, which is located at the southwest corner of the Hadley property. That's the big lot that's been out there for a number of years. I've talked to our director of buildings and grounds. He says the last time this area could have undergone any type of major reconstruction was at least 20 years ago. And he knows 13 or 14 years ago, that lot was in such bad shape that all they did was they come in and they put a geotech fabric on top with 2 inches of asphalt on top of that. So this is the parking lot that needs work. It's whether we do above ground detention, leave the lot like it is. The lot still needs to have work done, but it would be my recommendation that we at least take a look, as we have a once in a lifetime opportunity to take a look at the long-term implications of retaining green space, putting stormwater underground, just generally trying to clean up that site long-term, what's going to happen with this campus over a number of years. Mm-hmm. The costs are as indicated in the table on the second page. Paving costs are estimated at about $340,000. We have excavation work, stormwater system, site plumbing, site landscaping, site electric and lighting, project allowances of $100,000, the professional fees of almost $100,000, total cost of about $900,000, with about $100,000 in allowances there. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have a lot that will be in great shape for the next 10, 15 years. Probably only need some slight updates in the next 15 to 20 years. Something that we did do over at Franklin a number of years ago, 3 years ago now, mm-hmm. Certainly something that needs to occur at this site also.
Bob, is there cost sharing with the village? You know, they invited us to be a part of this conversation because they're redoing the sewers and all that, so it makes some sense to come to the district. But
nobody's really talking in terms of a commitment now. We did get, we feel as though we've got about $70,000 worth of concessions a couple of years ago when we did the Franklin project, because We eliminated the retaining wall, the curb and gutter, and they did the sidewalks for us.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But that work was going to be done anyways, and it was just sort of a cleanup. We were very lucky to get in on it type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we'll have any cost sharing here. Of course, I would investigate them to the fullest extent possible.
Mm-hmm.
But what we would be doing is we would be, they're looking to bring upgraded water and sewer lines and everything else. So
mm-hmm.
we would look to lock our systems in together so that there mm-hmm. isn't this sort of truncated service between mm-hmm. the village of Glen Ellen, Hadley, the city of Wheaton, and mm-hmm. so forth.
So that's one advantage to this, is that it kind of cleans up our kind of plumbing underneath there.
It cleans up everything underneath there. If you're going west on Hawthorne, and just as you hit the that Hadley property, you notice that the curb sort of expands to the north there. That's where all of our water and sewer lines connect.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about, because of the size of Hadley, the way the neighborhood has grown over the years, they're talking about increasing the water, the water lines themselves, the sewer lines, any stormwater issues that the area may have, not just Hadley, but any of the neighborhood issues that the area may have, all those would look to be cleaned up with this project. Now, this project is of the nature that it's not something that I can just go and talk to the village of Glen Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
We would need to have the cooperation of the village of Glen Ellen, the city of Wheat, and Page County. And we have had initial introductory conversations with those agencies,
mm-hmm.
and we're all working in the spirit of cooperation to, if we decide to move forward, to move this project along as quickly as we can. This is kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences or opportunities that we might have to clean up all the existing issues that we have regarding a number of things on that site.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, given the price of this particular project, it would consume the majority of our capital project dollars for next year, which, you know, as you've also seen us lay out the next 10 to 15 years, parking lots and roofs are big ticket items for us. And basically, because of Bob's really vigilant attention to what our sites have needed, we are in a place where a lot of the other capital work we would be doing in the short term at our other buildings, short of a large master facilities change, is really smaller work. And so it's likely that over the next several years, this is the kind of project we'll see more of. Is it one large project or one school over the course of many summers?
Now, I was just making some notes in terms of what we might do in terms of capital projects, because I'm sure that question was going to come up. And just off the top of my head, we would obviously discuss the Hadley parking lot, where it's quite, I would say more than quite possible, more than likely that we're going to have to replace the forward portable at Lincoln next summer. We're also talking about continuing the painting program that we've instituted this year, and then I have some minor door replacements that need, various doors throughout the district need to be worked on. Front doors, back doors, just different types of things like that. So this is an opportunity where we would dedicate a large chunk of dollars for a particular project. But again, I think what you're going to see over the next few years are a lot of these types of recommendations, where we're going to do a roof on a building, or we'll do smaller sections of roofs on each of our buildings. In other words, you'll see a major project, you'll see a major dedication of dollars. Now, when you talk about parking lots, remember, we kind of get off a little bit easy, because Forest Glen and Lincoln, we sort of share in a majority of our parking with the village and the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Churchill, Hadley, and Franklin, those are the three lots that we own and we need to maintain. As I stated, we've just done the, just in the past couple of years, have completed the lot over at Franklin, and we will look to continue this type of work, possibly next year at Hadley and then Churchill somewhere down the road.
What was the net parking space change on this?
About even, not much of a change. We would hope. The reason we don't have exact numbers yet is because we haven't decided or landed on a final recommendation in terms of design, and also we don't have handicapped parking spaces included on this also, because those will be determined by where we ultimately land on the the design and the flow of this recommendation.
But these do represent, as it looks right now, an increase in spaces, probably about 20 spaces.
And what are we full today? Do we have people parking on the street?
Oh, yeah.
Not during the school day, but when you have things in the evening, that's when it fills up. I drove by many times during the day.
During the school, if we go there to visit or business,
I've had to park on the street.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. It's not like when the parents are all there at night, though.
Oh, no. No, nothing.
And you're never going to be able to have every parent park.
Like at any school, yeah.
Yeah, no. It's not, and that would not be the intent of a parking lot this size.
We'll never remedy that on the site of Hadley now. Mm-hmm. But this would be something that would accommodate, our staff and then a reasonable amount of visitors that may come in or out throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, it still wasn't clear to me what the benefit of the timing is with the village.
Well, first of all, the project needs to be done. That's first and foremost. Whether we do stormwater detention or we just do the wholesale lot replacement, we may, because of the way things have occurred previously, if we touch that lot, we may be required to account for stormwater. We won't know these things until we start to do our investigation. And ultimately, how that lot, how it flows, how much land is disturbed, those are all things that we need to be taking into consideration as we're doing this project, certainly the initial investigation.
The major advantage is really to our neighbors. You're tearing up that area of Hawthorne once over a course of a summer, as opposed to perhaps a summer and then another summer later where you have a significant disruption to that area because you're tearing up the parking lot. Mm-hmm. So it's completing two projects simultaneously that have some connection to each other. And because of the stormwater issues and the zoning issues, that sort of thing, it allows you to have, perhaps, we can't say whether there are intergovernmental opportunities in there, but if there are, this would be the time we'd be able to find them.
To share a bid?
Perhaps.
Said to leverage even if it lands.
And if there's stormwater issues that the village has to address and we have to address, that similar to what we did at Franklin, where we had a little bit of cost sharing on that, not a lot, but a little bit of cost sharing on that stormwater work.
Well, when the streets opened up, I mean, you have to connect into the storm sewer, that you can do that a little easier than having to try to do it.
Everything there is going to be replaced on the village property along the street there, so we would just work in cooperation to make sure that we make the appropriate or proper connections. And again, we look at everything 10, 20, 30 years down the road in terms of what's the long-term benefit for that site. Again, there's going to be water line replacement, sewer replacement, there'll be stormwater applications, traffic flow issues. We would look and work together in terms of cooperation to make this the best project for our building as well as the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just look back and see how nicely things have gone over at Franklin, we've had some major, major storms over the past year or two, and there hasn't been any flooding issues that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. I mean, that system has just done a fantastic job for the community of Glen Ellyn as a whole.
Yeah. And just to clarify in here, because you said this is a part of the presentation, but it is in our notes from the recommendation. There are parts of this lot that have already deteriorated, so we would be looking at a recommendation down the road pretty soon anyway for problems with the lot.
I will make a recommendation, whether it includes stormwater or does not include stormwater. We need to do something with the lot and the approaching driveways and the exit points. If you drive in through that, I just happened to drive in just the other day, and there's probably a 6 or 8 inch sort of the gas line that's sitting there now, that whole front of the driveway is going on. There's areas throughout that entire property that are having a number of issues, and that's just because, for one reason or another, the situation was never addressed and addressed the long term the way it needs to be addressed.
Now, Bob, just to make a clarifying statement around stormwater, we are talking about stormwater detention that is underground, as opposed to what we have now, which is above ground detention.
I would not make a recommendation for above ground detention, given our community, given our lack of green space, given our need just for all the space we can possibly.
But so we're talking about additional stormwater Just to be clear.
Where's that vault that we just worked on?
That's in the back area on the west, the northwest edge of our property. Just almost, if you look out where that new three-room addition is, 50 feet out from that addition, approaching Glencoe is where that vault is at.
But the $15,000, what does that buy us?
That buys us a preliminary analysis by Erickson Engineering in terms of designing what it's going to take to create an underground stormwater detention and then introduce initial conversations with the village. Where do we need to go? What do we need? What do you need to see? That type of thing.
So but that's there more to this than what we think.
Yeah.
Now, when you did something very similar to you, with Franklin.
Mm-hmm. We did it there. We had to do it at Hadley. We've done it before. This $15,000 will not be spent money that we'll never get use of. If we move forward with the project, it'll just be incorporated with their normal fees because this is preliminary work that would need to occur in either case.
But this is such a huge project. I think that what Bob was interested in, if the board were to say, don't even consider it, we're not going to, we don't want you to even consider this project for next year, then of course we wouldn't go forward with that expenditure.
That's exactly.
Well, I think
any questions? It's
worth going at least through the investigation.
Right. That's what we would suggest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and that the 15 are included, so that we all saw this in professional fees in the $95,000. So.
Yes, this will not be wasted money. This will all be work that would need to be done anyways if we move forward with the project.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Wheaton? Is Wheaton Boundary Glencoe or is it?
Wheaton Boundary? No, Wheaton Boundary is right in front of the administrative area of Hadley. If you look where the black tops. There's a major you can see. Mm-hmm. Black top or concrete, you can see where the dividing line occurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Split
right.
The school
in. The actual village limit runs through the property, but I believe a number of years ago, Wheaton gave Glen Ellen the plan, the overall oversight to it, to the whole property. So, but yet, when you get into stormwater, you now have to bring in the
well, it's a
county issue. It's a county issue also. So, but basically, the two governmental entities got together and said, okay, they have the properties all under Glen Ellen, even though the village limits run, I think, through the administration offices.
Okay.
Yeah, the three driveways, these homes are in Wheaton.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the fourth driveway at the top's in one house.
Right.
And it's their goal that we've worked in cooperation. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. And finally,
Bob, do you want to table that till the next meeting?
No, I would.
Portable.
Portables. We were on the 15th.
You can introduce it.
Sorry for having so much fun.
We have a hearing. Public. Oh yeah, then we will have to.
We might have to. This is just for informational purposes. Mm-hmm. It shows what we typically might spend on the portables on an annual basis in terms of cost, in terms of keeping them updated. And then there's also a plan out there in terms of when we're looking at replacement of the existing portables. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will close the Senior Finance Committee.
Bob, are you going to come back with a recommendation for the portable cost in terms of?
No, this is just a conversation in terms of this is what we spend annually, and this is what we're talking about in terms of projected replacement dates. Because
it's really
we're looking at doing one in 2013 and then every couple of years after.
Something we should put into the midst of our conversation with Master Facilities.
Okay.
Ready to continue?
I'm done.
Thank you.